Good afternoon, Packers fans. Aaron Nagler here with your Packers Daily Chat, coming to you live on the Cheesehead TV social channels. It is Wednesday. Hope you're all having a fantastic day, and I hope you've subscribed to the Cheesehead TV Nation newsletter, going out bright and early tomorrow morning. Each and every week, tons of Packers goodness in your inbox. The link to sign up is in the description of this video. Make sure you do it, baby. All offseason, tons of Packers content. You know you want it. Make sure you do it. The other thing you should make sure you do is hit subscribe, people. Come on now. I got a lot of likes each and every video, but I need some more subscribers up in here. So I see some of you out there. You're here every day, and I know what you're saying. You're saying, you know, Aaron, I know you go live every day at 5, and you'll post it if you're not going to make it, but I don't really need to subscribe. But then you would miss out on when great content drops, like Cody doing his top 5 Packers draft needs, or the chat I just had with Brent Hensel, the curator of the Green Bay Packers Hall of Fame, about their partnership with UWGB and the history of the draft course that they're offering throughout the month of April. You want to know when that stuff comes out. You want to know when it drops here on the channel. Hit subscribe, people. Do it. Hope you're all well. I've been kind of perusing through the NFL rules proposals that dropped earlier this afternoon, and I know for the next 5 minutes or so, I'm going to sound like an old man yelling at a cloud, and you're just going to have to bear with me because I need to get some of this off my chest. Obviously, I think the big headline of the day from the proposals that we've seen from the competition committee, the kind of number one driver of headlines this afternoon has been the possibility that ownership next week during the league meetings has the opportunity to make the new, quote, dynamic kickoff permanent. If you'll recall, last year was a one-year trial, see how it goes kind of situation. Now they can make it permanent. There is one tweak, or one specific tweak, that they are proposing, which would be the touchback coming out to the 35-yard line. Obviously, they're trying to incentivize people to, you know, to allow teams to return the football. They don't want what they saw last year, which was the majority of teams just kicking it out of the end zone, being just fine, having teams take over at the 30, trying to get teams to utilize the kickoff as a play. And this is where I get old Manny on this. Like, the whole reason they wanted to go to this format to tear apart, essentially, the kickoff, even after all the rules changes they had made to try and, in an attempt to, quote, make it safer, was to, you know, lessen the impact injury-wise. And one of those aspects was, yeah, they're probably going to see a lot fewer returns. And no doubt about it, the way they have situated the actual play itself, with players not being allowed to move prior to the handling of the football, no wedges are allowed, things of this nature clearly have helped as far as bringing a lot of the really important stuff, like the head injuries, head trauma, etc. Those types of injuries have decreased. That data is there for everyone to see. But by incentivizing more returns, you are simply putting guys back into harm's way. And I, for one, am fine with that. I'm watching football. These guys are fine with it. They're playing football. This isn't 20 years ago where the NFL was being shady about what a lifetime of playing football does to you. Like, that science is out there now. That is pretty widely known. Guys understand the risks that they're taking. So I don't have an issue with the kickoff and trying to, but this idea that they keep futzing and tinkering and trying to make it safer, quote unquote, while at the same time then turning around and going, oh yeah, it's a very dangerous play, but you know, we need a few more of them. It's the, that leads me to the other, one of the other rules proposals today. This is the one that really got me old man kind of yelling at cloud this afternoon, was the committee talking about the potential for increased replay assistance if, there's a big if a flag is thrown on the field for a hit to the quarterback's or a defensive player's head or neck area. Again, we're talking player safety, right? But replay assist only allowed to get involved if a flag is thrown. And I only bring this up because I have the image of Za'Darius Smith essentially punching Jordan Love in the face after a particular play in Detroit last year, burned in my brain. Now, that's a play that everyone could see. I remember on Watch Party, we all saw it. We saw it happen live. And then they showed the replay, and it was glaringly obvious. Now, there's an opportunity for, if you're going to make it punitive, if you want to throw flags for guys, and look, I don't even think Za'Darius tried to hit him in the head. I think he's just, you know, going after the quarterback, and stuff happens. That's football, and I'm fine with it. But if the NFL really wants to make these punitive measures where these flags that we throw are going to discourage players from hitting other quarterbacks in the head, which I think is nonsense, but if you're going to do that, at least make sure that the guys taking the damage, their team is somewhat protected and or rewarded for an illegal play from an opponent. You know, now that play, several others that you guys remember throughout all of last season, not just with Jordan Love, but most quarterbacks, there are so many uncalled hits to the head that just it buggers belief that they can still hide behind the player safety aspect of everything they do when it comes to the rules. But this rule in particular, this goes out of its way to make sure that they're protecting, i.e. making sure that it's correct because the official threw a flag. So wait, we're protecting the officials and the job they're doing more than the actual guys who are playing the game? This makes zero sense to me. Everyone can see when a quarterback gets hit in the head. If it happens, you want those plays flagged, flag it. You have the ability to do so. This just drives me insane. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd prefer that there were no, like, there were precious few protections for the quarterback. I'm an old school guy. You know, I remember quarterbacks back in the day having to dodge things and put up with big hits and stand in there and make business decisions. It was a glorious time. And it made the game a hell of a lot more gladiator-like, and I loved it. But I get that's not the modern era. It's not the way they're going to play this game now. I understand that. But at least be real about, oh, we're protecting these players. Well, then maybe these punitive measures should be, you know, adjudicated for the actual plays on the field, not to protect the officials' mistakes. That drives me insane. It drives me nuts. And again, I know I'm out here on an island. I'm yelling at the clouds. You can set me to ignore because most people do, and I completely understand it. But had to get it off my chest. I hope you had fun listening to me rant. Just drives me crazy. Hello to everybody in the comments section. So good to see everybody. Hope you're all doing well. Brandy starting us off with a super chat. How are you, Brandy? How did one complain about the draft before the advent of the internet? Newspaper articles? Well, it depends on the nature of the complaint, Brandy. I believe bar stools were a very common theme when it came to complaining about the draft pre-internet days. I just remember when I was growing up, we spent the whole weekend kind of huddled together with friends. That was what was so great about the weekend format, where you did the entirety of the draft in 2 days, kind of broken in half there, right? One half was on Saturday, one half was on Sunday. The whole thing was done. And Monday, you started talking about your team and who they had drafted and how they fit and what they're going to do, those excited about the rookies, etc. And there certainly wasn't nearly as much coverage and content created in the lead up to the draft. So there was a lot less complaining going on because there was just a lot less kind of content and conversation happening in the lead up. And there was less time. The draft wasn't pushed back so far. I could go on. You're getting me back into old man tendency here, but yes, it was a glorious time. I'm telling you, when the draft was 2 days on a weekend, we never had it better as a human species because that was glorious. Jeezy baby, how are you, man? Idea to fix the kickoff, carry the G chugging contest. See, now you're talking sense. Now you're making sense, Jeezy baby. Thank goodness you're here. I'm down with this idea. Ooh, Jay, that's a good one. Flopping should be barred too. While I agree, I do think sometimes it's maybe a bit difficult to, adjudicate where the intent is. Like, yeah, sometimes flops are obvious, but sometimes maybe a guy looks like he's flopped. And we've seen this. We actually saw this in the Raiders game 2 years ago where it looked like Elgton Jenkins had, quote, flopped, but he actually had tripped over someone's foot, you know? So, you know, I I'm reticent to give the officials yet another thing to look at and worry about and get wrong, you know, which is, let's face it, what they do quite a bit of. There's some fellow oldsters here in the comments. I remember when real football was played as well. All those killer hits were awesome. Look, I appreciate that, but I will say, look, I am not taking anything away from the guys who play today. It is still an incredibly violent sport, and they are certainly still dealing with the long-term ramifications of playing a game for our enjoyment. And yes, they are compensated very well, but that doesn't mean that that hurt and the long-term health effects just magically go away. You know, it's understandable that the NFL has evolved the way it has. But yeah, I miss it. I really do miss it. Richard, how are you, man? Thanks for the chat. Let's say the Packers go edge, defensive line, or wide receiver in the first round. Do you see them starting over our current players, or do you see them starting as depth? Should us Packers fans reset our expectations? I do think it's, I mean, I don't mean to sound like Matt LaFleur here, but I do think that's a pretty big case-by-case basis. I think it's down to the player, what their skill set is, how they fit into the scheme immediately, given their whatever experience they had in college, schematically, teammate-wise, what they were being asked to do. For instance, like if they draft a wide receiver, even in the first round, I would suspect, yeah, they would probably bring him along pretty slowly. I don't think that's someone that you would see out there immediately day one as a starter. Now that said, I think they would be involved. I think there would be packages where, you know, they'd be able to at least see the field, right? But I would be very surprised if a guy came in and was just starting as a wide receiver. Now, an edge player, I think there's a chance that player contributes immediately, again, depending on who he is. But I also think, you know, they've got some considerable investment in that position already, where you've got Rashawn Gary, you've got Lucas Van Ness, you've got a former draft pick in Enagbare, you've got Brenton Cox Jr., who was very productive at times and stretches last year. Those guys are going to see the field. They're going to continue to, you know, be part of the defense. But if you have a guy, let's say, you know, I know everyone's talking about Shamar Stewart as a possibility there, but I do think he's going to be long gone by the time the Packers pick. But if Stewart were to magically fall to the Packers, or if, as Justice is hoping, the Packers jump up to get him, I think there's a good chance. Yeah, maybe not as a, he's a, not an immediate starter, but he's certainly playing a hell of a lot early. And I do think his athleticism would be hard to keep off the field. Now, that said, even if it is someone as freaky athletic as that, et cetera, man, you saw Edgerrin Cooper last year. You know, he played immediately. I remember in week one, he kind of popped off the field, but he only played 14 snaps out of, I think there were like 60 available, right? Now, some of that was because he was hurt in camp and he was trying to catch up, et cetera. But I don't know that there's a guy I would imagine would step in and just play 100% of the snaps on either side of the ball right away. That would be surprising to me. It's not how the Packers have operated historically. Certainly not how Matt and company have gone about it in this recent era. I'm not saying it'd be impossible, but I think it's unlikely. Let's put it that way. Craig Brockmiller, how are you, man? Thanks for the super chat. My old man rant. If it is illegal for a defensive player to put his hand in the face of an offensive player, then it should be illegal for the runner to use a stiff arm. Yeah, that's a, you know, that's an old school thing. Offense, as long as you don't twist the helmet, you're fine using the stiff arm, and I'm fine with that too. I mean, I got no problem with that, but if you got to keep it, and I will say I've seen more offensive penalties called in that kind of area in the last kind of 2 or 3 years than I have in a very long time. The key is the twisting, right? If you just stiff and you are straight armed and you don't twist his helmet, I'm fine with it. The danger comes when the helmet is twisted. That's why when you get a, you know, a defensive penalty, it's often because there's a finger on the face mask and you twist his neck, and that's the danger. That's what you're trying to avoid. So yeah, I mean, I got no problem with the old school kind of reasoning behind the stiff arm being legal. Michael, any update on the possible tush push ban? We will find out a lot about that next week when the owners meet, the annual league meetings down in Florida, I believe, next week. That will be part of the discussion. And I think there's a decent chance that it gets talked about. I'll be surprised if there are I believe it's 24 votes needed to actually change anything about it. I'll be very surprised if they get 24 votes on that. Adam says, Stewart feels like a 15 to 20 pick there. We'll see. Possible. And again, like I said, maybe the Packers jump up, much like they did for Jordan Love. You know, it's not a huge jump, but enough to get ahead of maybe some teams they're worried about. It's a possibility, and I love the player. I'd love that pick, but I do think it's likely he's gone, but you never know. Kerry, that's an interesting point. Nags, I truly believe that the NFL is bringing the kickoff back from the death as a bargaining tool with the NFL union over an 18-game season. Just saying, your mileage may vary. It's possible. I mean, because everything is a negotiation, right? And I do think the NFLPA would probably look at that. But if the numbers continue to be good as far as lessening not just injuries overall, but types of injuries, specifically head and neck injuries, you know, I don't see them kind of utilizing that as one of their bargaining chips. But everything is a negotiation. And perhaps the NFL is trying to, like, you know, put something in play that they can then take away, seemingly as a, maybe not a gift, but as a chip in their bargaining with the NFLPA for an 18-game season. You're not off the mark to look at it in that way. Joe, thanks for the super chat, man. Thanks for being a Care of the G Club member. Is Matthew Golden too small for Goot to consider in the first round, especially since Reed and Hardman are also under 6 feet, 200 pounds? Great question, Joe. I love Golden as a player. I'd be shocked if the Packers took him, and I'd definitely be shocked if they took him in the first round. But both for what you're talking about here as far as his size goes, though I do think that would be the lesser of the reasons. I think also, I know he had a lot of big plays this year with Texas, but you go back and look at his kind of totality of his career in college, man, he's been a streaky player and a bit inconsistent when it comes to catching the football, which, on a team where you've coming off a year where you've really struggled with drops, I'm not so sure that's what you want to be bringing into your building. Like I said, I love the player. I love his game. I'd be very excited if the Packers added him, but I do think there's a real distinct possibility that they would pass, even if he was on the board at 23. But we'll find out, man. God knows. Nagler's never right. Craig, thanks again, man. Old Man Rant Part 2. Ditch the 5-yard automatic first down on defensive holding. Make it a 10-yard penalty like the offense gets. Ooh, Funnily enough, Craig, that is one of the proposals from the Lions, that they want to get rid of the automatic first down for defensive holding. And I know the counter argument here is always like, well, you know, if you're downfield and you're beat, you just tackle the guy and you get the 5-yard penalty, etc. Now, in your proposal, you make it a 10-yard penalty. And yeah, that I understand that worry, but also, that's how football, again, going old school again, it's how football was for the longest time before they made everything about the offense. I got no problem with it. You get beat, you know, and you have to tackle a guy and take a penalty, then you do so, you know. And if you're the offensive player, beat him well enough that you can't get tackled and go catch that football and score a touchdown. I'm all for it. But yeah, the worst, though, and this is what kind of I think is the gist of this kind of argument and the gist of the proposal, the worst is when it's like you get a team behind the stick, say you go from a 2nd and 8, you get a big sack on 2nd down, now it's 3rd and say 16-17 yards, and some really, I'm gonna say questionable, but some really soft contact happens on the other side of the field, completely immaterial to the play. Yet now it's called, there's a flag, and it's defensive holding, automatic first down that did for something that had no material effect on the actual play on the field. Those are the ones that boil my blood. And that's where I can understand where the Lions and other teams might be coming from. It's beyond punitive for the defense, and it feeds into this, oh, it's all about the offense, and we're making it impossible to play defense, and I don't know how you play defense in the league anymore, actually. And this is just one example of why. Like, those are the things that drive me nuts. And I am for the spirit of the proposal. But again, much like I said earlier, I'll be very surprised if it gets any support from the ownership next week. Ed, how are you, man? Thanks for the super chat. What are some of your most memorable Packer post-game quotes? Oh, that's a good question, man. You know, honestly, nothing is leaping to mind right now. I'd have to think about it. I remember post-game moments more than I remember quotes, probably. I'll never forget Aaron Rodgers after beating the Saints in the opener, talking about, you know, if only we had held off-season workouts, you know, because of all the kind of drama that off-season. And I remember he was being crucified on ESPN every day. I think Teddy Bruschi was particularly harsh on Rodgers for not getting together in the offseason with his wide receivers, et cetera. And then they went out and scored 30 plus on the Saints in week one. And, you know, almost immediately at the podium afterwards, he was like, you know what? I was sitting there looking at the scoreboard thinking, if only we had held offseason workouts, we could have scored 40. Like, I love a good, you know, petty quote. And that was pretty phenomenal. But again, I way more remember moments like Brett Favre starting to cry after the big comeback win in week one against the Raiders. In I think it was 99. Like, those are moments that like are so human, so visceral, that really, you know, like those are the ones I remember because it's like they really hit you emotionally. But yeah, I should think about it as far as quotes throughout the years, because I know there've been some good ones. Ryan, how are you, man? I've seen McMillan slipping down boards. At what point do you feel we should, in your humble opinion, move up to get him? Ryan, I'll be surprised again if they do move up for anyone, whether it's Tet or whether it's Stewart, just because they don't have a great wealth of draft selections. Now, as I say every year, it only takes one guy for Brian to fall in love with and want to make that kind of move. But man, it's got to be a very steadfast belief that that player is special and is going to be a major blue chip difference maker. Is Tet that guy? Maybe. I don't think so. I think he's going to be a really good player. So yeah, I, as far as like if he would make that move, when he would pull the trigger, man, I have little idea, because it's so rare that that happens, and it's so rare that this general manager in particular would give up assets for one player. Craig's on a roll here. Old man rant 3. I'm tired. I'm going to bed. Thanks for all you do. Get off my lawn. Thanks, brother. I appreciate you. All right, buddy. I'm going to have to get going. I cannot thank you enough for hanging out, talking Packers each and every day, Monday through Friday, right here on the Cheesehead TV social channels. Please do me a monster favor. Hit like on the video, subscribe to the channel, and then tell your friends and tell your family. Cheesehead TV, we are devoted to Green Bay Packers fans worldwide. Thanks a lot, everybody. Have a great night. Go Pack, go.